This is the Internet Multicasting Service. Harper Audio presents William Faulkner reading from his stream of consciousness style novel, As I Lay Dying.
Paul stands beside the bed. From behind his leg, Vardaman peers, with his round head and his eyes round, and his mouth beginning to open. She looks at Paul. All her failing life appears to drain into her eyes, urgent, irremediable. It's Jewel she wants, Duodell says. Why, Addie, Paul says, him and Darwin to make one more loan. They thought there was time, that you would wait for them, and that $3 and all, he stoops, laying his hand on hers. For a while yet she looks at him without reproach, without anything at all, as if her eyes alone to listen to the irrevocable cessation of his voice. Then she raises herself, who has not moved in 10 days. Duodell leans down, trying to press her back. Ma, she says, Ma. She is looking out the window, at Cash stooping steadily at the board in the fading light, laboring on toward darkness into it, as though the stroking of the saw illumined its own motion, board and saw engendered. You, Cash, she shouts, her voice harsh, strong and unimpaired. You, Cash. He looks up at the gaunt face framed by the window in the twilight. It is a composite picture of all time since he was a child. He drops the saw and lifts the board for her to see, watching the window in which her face has not moved. He drags a second plank into position and slants the two of them into their final juxtaposition, gesturing toward the one jet on the ground, shaping with his empty hand in pantomime the finished box. For a while, she still looks down at him from the composite picture, neither with censure nor approbation. Then the face disappears. She lies back and turns her head without so much as glancing at Paul. She looks at Vardaman, her eyes, the life in them rushing suddenly upon them. The two flames glare up for a steady instant. Then they go out as though someone is laying down and blown upon them. Ma, Duodell says, Ma, leaning above the bed, her hands lifted a little, the fan still moving like it was for 10 days, she begins to keen. Her voice is strong, young, tremulous and clear, wrapped with its own timbre and volume, the fan still moving steadily up and down, whispering the useless air. Then she flings herself across Addie Bundren's knees, clutching her, shaking her with the furious strength of the young, before sprawling suddenly across the handful of rotten bones that Addie Bundren left, jarring the whole bed into a chattering sibilance of mattress shucks, her arms outflung and the fan in one hand still, beating with expiring breath into the quilt. From behind Paul's leg, Vardaman tears, his mouth full open and all color draining from his face into his mouth, as though he has by some means fleshed his own teeth in himself, sucking. He begins to move slowly backward from the bed, his eyes round, his pale face fading into the dust like a piece of paper pasted on a failing wall, and so out the door. Paul leans above the bed in the twilight, his humped silhouette partaking of that owl-like quality of a wry-feathered, disgruntled outrage, within which lurks a wisdom too profound or too inert for even thought. Darn them boys, he says. Jewel, I say, overhead the day drives level and gray, hiding the sun by a flight of gray spears. In the rain, the mules smoke a little, splash yellow with mud, the off one clinging in sliding lunges to the side of the road above the ditch. The tilted lumber gleams dull yellow, water-soaked and heavy as lead, tilted at a steep angle into the ditch above the broken wheel, above the shattered spokes and above Jewel's ankle, the runnel of yellow water, neither earth nor water swirls, curving with the yellow road, neither earth nor water, down the hill, dissolving into a steaming mass of dark green, neither earth nor sky. Jewel, I say. Cash comes to the door, carrying the saw. Paul stands beside the bed, humped, his arms dangling. He turns his head, his shabby profile, his chin collapsing slowly as he wakes the snuff against his gum. She's gone, Cash says. She's taken and left us, Paul says. Cash does not look at him. How now are you done, Paul says. Cash does not answer. He enters, carrying the saw. I reckon you better get at it, Paul says. You'll have to do the best you can with them boys gone off that away. Cash looks down at her face. He is not listening to Paul at all. He does not approach the bed. He stops in the middle of the floor, the saw against his leg, his sweating arms powdered lightly with sawdust, his face composed. If you get in a tight, maybe some of them will get here tomorrow and help you, Paul says. Vernon could. Cash is not listening. He is looking down at her peaceful, rigid face fading into the dusk as though darkness were a precursor of the ultimate earth, until at last the face seems to float detached upon it, lightly as the reflection of a dead leaf. There's Christians enough to help you, Paul says. Cash is not listening. After a while, he turns without looking at Paul and leaves the room. Then the saw begins to snore again. They will help us in our sorrow, Paul says. The sound of the saw is steady, competent, unhurried, stirring the dying light so that each stroke her face seems to wake a little into an expression of listening and awaiting. As though she were counting the strokes, Paul looks down at the face, at the black sprawl of Duodell's hair, the outflung arms, the clutch fan now motionless on the fading quilt. I reckon you better get supper on, he says. Duodell doesn't move. Get up now and put supper on, Paul says. We got to keep our strength up. I reckon Dr. Peabody's right hungry coming all this way, and Cash will need to eat quick and get back to work so he can finish it in time. Duodell rises, heaving to her feet. She looks down at the face. It is like a casting of fading bronze upon a pillar, the hands alone still within the semblance of life, a curl gnarled and aching, a spent yet alert quality from which weariness, exhaustion, travail has not yet departed. As though they doubted even yet the actuality of rest, guarding with haunted and penurious alertness the cessation which they know cannot last. Duodell stoops and slides the quilt from beneath them and draws it up over them to the chin, smoothing it down, drawing it smooth. Then, without looking at Paul, she goes around the bed and leaves the room. She will go out where Peabody is, where she can stand in the twilight and look at his back with such an expression that, feeling her eyes and turning, he will say, I would not let it grieve me now. She was old and sick too, suffering more than we knew. She couldn't have got well. Vardaman's getting big now, and with you to take good care of them all, I would try not to let it grieve me. I expect you'd better go and get some supper ready. It don't have to be much, but they'll need to eat, and she looking at him saying, you could do so much for me if you just would, if you just knew. I'm I, and you are you, and I know it, and you don't know it, and you could do so much for me if you just would. And if you just would, then I could tell you, and then nobody would have to know it except you and me and Dahl. Paul stands over the bed, dangle arm, humped, motionless. He raises his hand to his head, scouring his hair, listening to the soul. He comes nearer and rubs his hand, palm and back on his thigh, and lays it on her face, and then on the hump of quilt where her hands are. He touches the quilt as he saw Duodell do, trying to smooth it up to the chin, but disarranging it instead. He tries to smooth it again clumsily, his hand awkward as a claw, smoothing at the wrinkles which he made and which continue to emerge beneath his hand with perverse ubiquity, so that at last he desists, his hand falling to his side, and stroking itself again, palm and back on his thigh. The sound of the saw snores steadily into the room. Paul breathes with a quiet rasping sound, mouthing the snuff against his gums. God's will be done, he says. Now I can get them teeth. Jules' hat droops limp over his neck, channeling water onto the soaked toe sack tied about his shoulders, as ankle deep in the running ditch, he pries with a slipping 2x4 with a piece of rotting log for fulcrum at the axle. Jewel, I say she is dead. Jewel, Addie Bundren is dead.
This has been Harper Audio. HarperCollins is the copyright owner of this recording and has consented to a limited distribution of Harper Audio as an 8 kHz computer sound file on Internet Town Hall. It is a violation of United States and international copyright laws to copy these recordings in any other way. Harper Audio is a trademark of HarperCollins Publishers, Inc. To order a copy of this tape or to request a catalog of all Harper Audio spoken word cassettes, please call 1-800-C-HARPER or 717-941-1214 or send mail to harper@town.hall.org. This has been a production of the Internet Multicasting Service. Support for Harper Audio is provided by HarperCollins and by Sun Microsystems and O'Reilly & Associates. Network connectivity for the Internet Multicasting Service is provided by UUNET Technologies and MFS DataNet.